I really like Christmas. It's sentimental, I know, but I just really like it. I'm hardly religious. I'd rather break bread with Dawkins than Desmond Tutu, to be honest. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to consumerism, to the commercialization of an ancient religion, to the westernization of a dead Palestinian press ganged into selling PlayStations and beer. But I still really like it. I'm looking forward to Christmas, though I'm not expecting a visit from Jesus. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I don't go in for ancient wisdom. I don't believe just cause ideas are tenacious, it means that they're worthy. I get freaked out by churches. Some of the hymns that they sing have nice chords, but the lyrics are dodgy. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to the miseducation of children who in tax-exempt institutions are taught to externalize blame and to feel ashamed and to judge things as plain right or wrong. But I quite like the song. Expecting big presents, the old combination of socks, jocks and chocolates is just fine by me. Cause I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mum. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. And you, my baby girl, my jet-lagged infant daughter, you'll be handed round the room like a puppy at a primary school, and you won't understand, but you will learn someday that wherever you are and whatever you face, these are the people who make you feel safe in this world. My sweet blue-eyed girl, Christmas comes around and you find yourself 9,000 miles from home, you'll know whatever comes. Your brothers and sisters and me and your mum will be waiting for you in the sun whenever you come.
your aunts and your uncles, your grandparents, cousins, and me and your mum. We'll be waiting for you in the sun, drinking white wine in the sun. Darling, when Christmas comes, we'll be waiting for you in the sun, drinking white wine in the sun. Waiting for you in the sun. Waiting for you. Waiting. I Christmas, it's sentimental, I know.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much.
Okay. That was White Wine in the Sun by Tim Minchin. I hope you enjoyed that one. I let it run pretty much all the way through because I really like it. I couldn't sort of bring myself to cut it in half for you guys, so I hope you enjoyed it as much as I do. Seemed particularly relevant for this bonus episode as I went to visit my parents over Christmas, and this episode is with my dad. Just out of privacy's sake for him, I'm not giving out his name or in any way how to contact him, because he didn't sign up to be online to have a son who was doing things online. He just sort of agreed to do this without, I think, realizing what he was getting into. The recording's a little bit rough. There was some editing that had to be done due to various technical issues and a full house, so it's not exactly going to be clean audio, but if you do listen to it all the way through, hope you enjoy it, and thanks for taking the time.
Degenocide, which was they had video of homicide, and they dubbed all the words over it.
Yeah, so it was like, I think I remember these sketches.
Oh, yeah, so.
No, I'm not online. You're going to need to set me up with the internet. I forgot about that.
Yeah, no, you're offline. What's going on? Oh, no, it's just connected. Okay.
So, let's just chat while I look this stuff up.
Yep.
So who do you remember growing up with in terms of comedy?
There was Rick Melvin. We used to go and watch Rick Melvin at the Council Club. He was a comedian that would stand there, and if you walked past at the wrong time, he'd give you hell for interfering in his act. So he'd make sure that everybody knew that you were just coming late, or you're going to the toilet, or you know, but that was his sort of comedy, was to make fun of people. I suppose it was funny, everybody loved it. Yeah.
No, it's not.
That was how comedy was back.
It's not a lost.
No, but it is. It's not. It's frowned upon. Sort of.
I think it depends
where you go. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the.
Yeah, you've got Kevin Bloody Wilson, who's still able to get around and do his act, which is.
He's touring at the moment. There he is.
Yeah. Yep. So, but he tells people, so, you know, if you're going to be upset, don't come to the show.
Which I feel for him is kind of important. He's kind of provocative.
Very, very provocative.
Yeah, he speaks to a certain sentimentality. Well, no, that's not the right word. He speaks to a certain sentiment. He speaks to a certain ideal that isn't necessarily popular anymore.
Oh, well, it's still popular, but it's. The way things are now, politically correctness has killed off a lot of stuff, but
you know, you got to go with the times, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. No.
But I don't know, who else to, well, obviously, as I said, Paul Hogan, he was one of my favourites.
Sure.
Norman Gunston.
Oh, yes, of course, Norman Gunston.
Yep. Yep. He was very good.
Yeah.
His interviews were classics.
Quite renowned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was classic.
Yeah, no, there was bits and pieces of him.
Yeah.
Like, I remember bits and pieces of him being on TV, and he was around, and there was definitely...
Arnie Jack. Graham Bond. Bond.
Album Purple,
yes. Yes, Album Purple was good.
I don't know Album Purple. Who's Album Purple?
What's his name?
You can teach me. Go on, who's Album Purple?
I've got to think of his real name. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter if you performed under Album Purple.
Yeah, Album Purple. Was his show. It was a movie. Album Purple. Purple movie. There we go, yep. It was... what was it? That's him. Yeah, what's his name?
He looks very of his time. Like that sort of leading man in a movie.
Yeah, that's him, yeah. But...
I don't think it would fly as much these days unless he was extremely talented.
He was well known for that, for Album Purple, but that was
about right. So is it sort of like a Steve Coogan-esque character, or is
it's a character.
Right, and what's his conceit? Yeah, like, what does he do?
Is he Album Purple? Just click on that. Yeah, that give me his proper name. I can't believe I can't remember his name now.
Graham Blundell.
That's it, Graham Blundell. Yeah.
I don't know Graham Blundell either. What did he do?
He was an actor.
Okay, so he was a comedic actor? Or
well, he was more of an actor, but this was a comedic role that he took up, and he did a couple of movies out of it, and I think they had a short series.
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny. It was, you know, sexist sort of bloke. He was, the girls were attracted to him, so, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so it's just sort of...
With that face. With that face. That's,
well, you know, it wasn't the face they were attracted to.
No, I bet not.
But yeah, no, that, it was funny, but, you know.
He made a brief appearance in Star Wars Episode 3.
There you go.
It's hilarious. He's the father of Padme, and he was in Episode 2, but... Oh, they were cut and appear only on the DVD release. Okay. That's bizarre. It's really bizarre. Somebody must have been a fan.
Yeah, well,
somebody must have really been a fan to call back would have been, to...
Because back then, he was very... That was very popular back in the... 70s.
Right, so 73 sex comedy Album Purple, and 74 sequel Album Purple Rides Again. I assume rides is a pun.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a sex comedy. I don't know this guy at all.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sure they did a stage show too. I can't be 100%, but I'm sure they did.
Well, that's kind of like the Mighty Boosh.
Oh, yeah, he was in Stork. There you go.
Oh, Stork. Right, yeah. I know Stork.
Australian.
Oh, here we go. What's this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Bruce Spencer.
First of many successful film adaptations. Oh, okay, yep, cool.
Yep.
Coming of Stork. That's David Williamson. All right. Huh. That's interesting.
Hmm.
We did a lot of David Williamson.
He's
good. He's a good writer.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you got the club. That was.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
And not so much hyper comedic, but there's some really good writing in there. Some great bits.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, well, that had another one. Graham Kennedy was in it.
Which one?
In the club.
Was he? Mm-hmm. Oh, in the adaptation?
In the movie.
Yeah. I haven't watched the movie. I've been sitting at home to be watched.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, he was in that. Well, that was another one, Graham Kennedy. Classic, mate.
Yeah.
Very good. You used to have his In Melbourne Tonight show.
Yeah.
We used to watch that. That was funny as. I mean, he'd just get up and do stuff like he'd do ads.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be rehearsed or anything. They'd just get up and just... And the ads might go for 10 minutes. Just advertising this stuff, and it'd just go like off track and...
Early days of improv. And
he definitely probably was the one who brought it all in. Like the late night show over in America. I think it'd be even before that. So I reckon that was before their time. Because that was back in the 60s.
Yeah, okay, right. And so
late 70s.
So we're talking, like, you reckon pre-Ed
Sullivan? Yeah, I reckon. If you go In Melbourne Tonight.
We Yep.
Ed Sullivan. Oh, okay. Yep. Ed Sullivan was probably the 50s, I'd say, so probably not before Ed Sullivan, but...
There we go, in Melbourne.
But,
I'm just worried that when we Google in Melbourne tonight, are we going to get his pages of
what's available today? Yes.
Oh, there we go, in Melbourne tonight, TV show.
Yep.
Graham Kennedy, Bert Newton.
Yep, Bert Newton.
Julia Morris.
Probably would have been in the last lot, but I can't see how she was.
Daryl?
What's that?
Unless she was Benny quite young.
Oh, Benny Hill, yeah. He was funny as. Benny Hill was good.
Are you a fan of Benny?
Yeah. Not many people, but I was.
No, I didn't mind it. I've seen bits and pieces. So
I don't mind it. That was just sort of. Benny, huh? No. You watch it now and I go, some of it was funny, but some of it was a bit stupid. But.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he made that Yakety Sax ubiquitous piece of music. Everyone knows it now. Talk me through this. What are we? So, right.
In Melbourne.
57 to 70. Oh, okay, there you go.
It was, yeah.
So, and Sullivan is. When did he get his show? Television. Of course, he was on radio before that. All right, 48.
Ah, okay.
So, we're talking close.
Yeah.
So, not too far off.
Yeah, but.
But I see, I see what you're getting at, especially for a show. It would have been
that's right. You
would have been our first introduction to, because you wouldn't have been able to get.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been getting a lot of American stuff now,
like late night.
Nah, that's right. I think. Just the way he did it, he was a pioneer definitely a pioneer for Australian comedy, and he was controversial, which was. Always a good thing.
Yeah,
that's what you want. Yeah. And he got kicked off a couple of times. And then he came back on later in the 80s, had a news show.
Mm.
But in that news show, he gave you the normal news, but also...
Mixed in.
Yeah, mixed in with a bit of comedy and stuff. And it was really, really good. I used to... That was on late at night.
So, hang on. So, would it be... So the Daily Show now and the Weekly and people like John Oliver work, they take real news stories and they work the funny angles.
Yes.
So that was sort of what he was doing?
It's very similar to that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd had a serious guy
telling
the stories and then he'd come in with his little bits.
So that's interesting.
Bits and pieces. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was on Channel 9.
Yeah.
That was, that may have even been called In Melbourne Tonight. Maybe, no. I can't remember what they called it. It was with John. He's still going too. What's his name? He's a newsreader.
Mm.
But you don't see him reading the news as much now. You see him more. I can't think of his name. Try. Go Graham Kennedy. And it'll come up with it for sure. Graham Kennedy. Okay. Just all the stuff he's done.
Yeah, so this is all his television career here. So
okay.
Starting from there.
Right,
so Melbourne Tonight, comedic style.
News show. It might have been that Graham Kennedy news show, I'd say. And it was with John. No, Ken Sutcliffe. Oh, it started with Ken Sutcliffe, yep. And then it went to Mango. What's his name? John Mango. Where are we?
I think we've lost the section. Hang on. I'll go back up.
Yeah, because Ken Sutcliffe does the sports. And it started with him and then it ended up with John Mangos?
John Mangos.
Yeah, Mangos.
Coast to Coast.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, and that was, it was funny. Right, Mangos was the straight sort of guy and Kennedy would come in and sort of he'd be, and he'd be telling all the jokes and...
Yeah. So it's sort of like a vaudeville.
Yeah, sort of, he'd be just giving you a laugh during the night and used to sit up and watch that.
Lighten the news a little.
Yeah, I like mine watching the news and that, and he used to, but yeah, he was good.
That's interesting. I didn't know that show.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's archives of it.
Oh, there would be, for sure. Because when I've got the Graham Kennedy DVD, and there's bits of that on that. So.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
Worth looking at.
Right here, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
That's yeah.
Cool. All right, and what else? Who else? Who, I mean, because you, what... You went through like the 60s,
through... Probably the 70s is when I started. More 70s? Started taking notice of things.
Right, yeah, of course.
60s, I was up.
Yeah, just whatever came your way.
Just going through and... But yeah, 70s, you'd start watching stuff like... We used to watch... what was his name? I used to come home and watch The Girls Were Dancing. I've got his DVDs too. God.
What else was on the show?
He was a comedian. He used to... Sid Snot.
Who?
Remember him?
No.
Yeah, he wore his bikey stuff and he...
Oh, yeah.
Sid Snot, that's it.
There you go. Might have been just before my time. No.
You used to watch it all the time.
I didn't... I don't think so, would I?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Kenny Everett, that's it. Kenny Everett.
Oh, Kenny Everett,
yeah, he was funny as he died of AIDS.
Yeah, hated him too.
British comedian, radio DJ, and television entertainer.
They're funny, man.
Yeah,
funny man. I used to love that show, but again, you look back and some of it's really funny, even some of it's just a bit. Yeah.
But of a certain time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But you do that with lots of stuff. You look back and you go, geez, I really enjoyed that, and then you go back and look at it and you go, maybe I didn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you did, but...
Yeah. It speaks to a different part of you, part of that. You,
some of it I still find really good, and some of it you just think, yeah, okay. It was funny at the time.
Yeah, sure.
But Graham Kennedy, I can watch that all the time. No worries, I can watch that. Paul Hogan, a lot of it was good. Some of it was a bit dodgy, but...
Sure.
Yeah.
But when you... Okay, so the... Controversy sounds like is what you were drawn to.
Yeah,
the people who spoke
definitely.
Out.
Definitely, I like. Yeah, you go and have something. Well, you know, if I'm going to stir someone up, and they're going to stir you, well, they've got to be able to take it as much as you're going to be able to take it. So you've got to be able to come back with a quick line. If someone's giving you crap, you got to go back and give them crap. Then it's got to you try and make it a bit funny, so that, you know, so you draw a bit.
You win the crown.
Well, yeah, you do.
That's interesting because you were. If the 70s is when you started paying attention properly and started making note of people, a lot was happening in that time, and to be drawn towards particularly news that was trying to skewering the establishment and skewering people who, everyone in power, the systems that were in power, then there must have been some pretty provocative news stances and some pretty provocative sort of... Because, you know, there would have been the war.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, that's... Well... Probably the 70s, Vietnam War and that, yeah. I suppose it, I don't know.
Well, they didn't really speak towards it.
Not really. I don't think they, not as much like, obviously now everything's on the news.
Hmm.
No matter what it is, it's on the news. But back then, probably only the real big stuff was there, like, you know, this was happening or...
Well, I mean, you didn't have a 24-hour news cycle,
no,
so it's
right.
hard to squeeze in every story.
Bang, this is what's on.
Mm.
But, yeah, the late one was, as I said, with Graham Kennedy, that was a different news altogether because that's when he made light of stuff and, I always figured that it's best to, you can still get the news, but you can have a bit of a...
Well, I mean, that I don't think that attitude's changed, really. I mean... There's statistics about, I can't remember the number, but there's a staggering percentage of people who get most of their news from shows like The Daily Show and from shows like John Oliver and stuff like that. And that's their main news source because it comes with this spoonful of sugar, I guess. It sort of makes it easier to
process. No one wants to hear down stuff all the time. You want to hear, yes, it's bad, but on that side of it, there's this side of it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Hope floats, I guess, or hope springs eternal.
Exactly.
And it's still,
everybody wants to
take it down.
Yeah, you don't want to go, oh, crap, the world's going to end, or, you know, all this sort of stuff. You want to know that, it might end, but before it ends, we can at least, go have a few beers or whatever.
Tell me what's going on, I'll order a pizza and we'll go out and get a few beers.
and see where it lights up.
I like that. That's a good philosophy. And the world's going to end. We may as well have a few drinks.
Well, you might as well, man, because when it's done, it's done.
Yeah, that's
And
true.
If it's not done, you know, what do you get? You get a hangover.
Some hair off the jog.
Well, that's it. That's it. But that, I mean, yeah, you can't. You got to look at, as Monty Python would say, look on the bright side of life.
Yeah. Always look on the bright. That's funny. But, because I know stand-up isn't a big, it's like the structure for it isn't as big in Australia as it is, say, in America or even in England.
Yeah.
So, did you guys get them? Getting prior and were you getting these sort of...
Nah.
This didn't come over?
Nah. Well, not that you came across? Nah.
Yeah.
As I say, we used to go and watch Rick Melbourne. Me and Mum used to go there and watch him. And it was funny. But, you know, it was virtually it. Oh, obviously, I've seen Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Mm.
But, yeah, really, in the comedy stuff, yeah, not so much in the touring.
Mm.
More stuff we'd go and see was the live bands and stuff. But,
yeah.
But you'd watch a lot on TV. And, as in touring-wise, no, not really.
We were a pretty isolated country.
Yeah.
Especially back then when I was growing up, it still took 6 to 8 months before a film to come across.
That's right.
And that's sort of changed with digital development. And so it's a worldwide market now. Everyone's sort of available at a touch of a fingertip.
Well, that's right. And if they don't get it out quick enough, you'll get it somehow anyway. So they've got to make sure that they've got it happening or, you know, they're going to be losing business anyway. So
absolutely. Yeah. So I don't understand places like an iTunes still having markets that are, like, they've got an American market, and I've tried to buy things online that are not available here in this region, and I'm not allowed to get them unless I go through some ulterior means, you know, if I get like a VPN or something like that, and it tells iTunes that I'm in America, and then I could buy it, which is just ridiculous, because there's a few things that I've tried to legally obtain and to just like, I'm going to support this artist and I want to be a part of this,
but you know,
and I'm not allowed to.
Yeah, it's a joke. Yeah, that's what Kevin had got Netflix through. Yeah, get the number and get it now, obviously.
It's here now.
Yeah, but yeah, you shouldn't have to do that.
No, I agree. No, I mean, they've got
especially
a sort of,
as you said, this day and age,
if you're not willing to give it to them when they want to pay for it, they'll find
that's
it.
Right. But I mean, you had your movies that come out, like Eddie Murphy and all that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
funny.
We had Raw floating around the house.
Yeah, Raw. Raw was.
I don't know where we got that from. I don't know where that came from. It was on video.
Yeah. I had that from somebody. I think I borrowed it or something. And
we've still got
it. One of those stories that you forgot to give it back and probably didn't see the bloke ever again and you ended up with it. But yeah, that was good. I liked that. Bill Cosby, I know he's frowned upon these days, but he was so funny back
then. Yeah, well, that, I think that's the thing that people are forgetting is that he did do a lot of good work.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
It's unfortunate the way the story turned out, and unfortunate is a big understatement.
Yeah.
But I've listened to a few of his older albums.
I've got a couple of his albums, yeah.
They're good. Probably, it's just good comedy.
Funny ass. Like, you know, him growing up with his kids and different things that they did and he did. And, things that you frown upon it now, like you can't talk to your kids like that, or you can't do that to your kids. But yeah, it was things that you did normal. That was just normal stuff back in the day, and funny as.
Mm-hmm.
Funny as. But yeah, I mean, there's so many of them like, that, as you said, didn't tour around here.
Yeah.
Or at least if they did,
you didn't
probably know Sydney or.
Yeah, Sydney is our main selling point.
Well, it was the overseas. I think
market.
Melbourne's come a long way.
Well, Amy Schumer did her only show when she was in Australia in Melbourne.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are realising that Melbourne is, well, music wise, it's always been.
Yeah,
it's just getting other people.
Yeah, it's developing that market. I mean, as far as from my perspective, as far as stand up goes, we've got the most developed scene. It's just getting audiences in is a lot harder because it's a lot of it's at this open mic level or at this really low level, and so people.
Well, that's seeing that was another thing. We used to have radio back then too, where you'd have a comedy show on.
You don't. Mick and Malloy. Eat Your Peas is a great album that came out of their radio years.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing. But now you don't have nothing like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't have it in the sketch variety.
So we always had Saturday Night Live coming through from America.
Yeah.
And you always watched that, and it was, yeah, that was funny back in the day, and it's still funny now.
Yeah.
I still think it was better way back in the time, but...
Well, it's hard to...
Yeah, of course.
Compete
with... You've got to go at times, yeah.
Ackroyd and...
Well, of course.
That sort of... There's really strong cast. Yeah. Not that... there's some really strong writers still. Like, Tina Fey came out of there.
Oh, look, I could watch it and still get a laugh out of it.
Mm.
But, of course, they're trying to go with the generations now, which see things a little bit different to how we've seen it too. So,
well, I feel part of their problem, and I was discussing this with someone a couple of weeks ago, I feel part of their problem is they're holding on to an outdated method.
Yep.
So when they started in the 70s, I think, they were bringing, essentially they were filming vaudeville. They were writing sketches, they were filming...
Yeah, that's right, doing...
It was very vaudeville-esque. Yeah. So they were bringing live theatre to the television, and that was a really progressive thing.
Yeah.
But now everyone has YouTube, and now everyone has high-quality sketch comedy like Key and Peele. And even the difference between, say, a full frontal sketch and a SNL sketch is in... production value, and it is in writing, and it is in being able to do something a little more obscure and maybe a bit more surreal because you're working within the video arts as opposed to just putting people on stage and saying we're gonna do a live version of this show. And I think it's a touch antiquated, and that's possibly why it's not landing as well. It's probably limiting their writers who have grown up with, I don't know, film and television their whole life. They're sort of living through what people call the golden age of TV, where you've just got these huge stances and this huge production value, and audiences expect a certain thing, especially when it's something like SNL, which has such a long heritage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So you expect the best.
Well, you do. And sometimes I look at it and I go, because I watched the 40-year special, and a lot of it was really good, but some of it was sort of they're clutching, you know. And
I mean, they've got their digital shorts, which I think produce good work, and is of a comparable scene to something like Key and Peele and Amy Schumer, her sketch show. They're both really strong sketch shows, but they can do a lot more because of the way that they're presenting. Like, it doesn't have to be locked into this one set, you know, X amount of characters, deliver it out to an audience. They can sort of play around a lot more.
Yeah. Well, that's what you need. You need it to be able to go in there and change up rather than do the same old...
Yeah.
And know that you can go in there and change up and no one's going to go, ooh, I don't know whether you can do
that. Right. Yeah, right. Because it's just one section of a larger organism as opposed to being... to 40 years on to change the entire formula of SNL is a big undertaking. That's right,
exactly.
So they're sort of locked into it until they die.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Yeah. I mean, it's good for that scene because people have something to aspire to.
Yeah, that's right, because they've still got their...
Because all of our sketch shows die.
Yeah, well,
a couple of seasons.
See, the problem is with them, like the D-Generation, for an example, they were really good. First 2 years, they were so funny and so right on the money, you know?
Yeah.
And then, I don't know what happened. Mick Malloy and all that went their separate ways, and Mick Malloy wasn't very funny. He's funny now, but when he did a couple of night shows. He did a late night show. That was terrible.
Right.
Terrible.
Didn't speak to his strengths or...
No, I don't think... I don't know what he was doing. It was just not funny. Anybody brought in... It was just... I don't know. He just... It seemed like he wasn't interested in it.
Right.
So without the other guys around him, I don't know. He didn't seem as strong. Now, I think he's funnier now.
So maybe he works best in an ensemble, like he can bounce off people.
Yeah, possibly. I think that's right. And why, when he's on the footy show, whilst it's not his thing, because I know he follows footy, but he never played or anything like that, but he can bounce off those guys and say a few funny things while they've been serious, and
Trevor Marmalade of that now.
Marmalade was another one. He was alright, he was funny, but just didn't have the strength to go on anything by himself. Like,
yeah,
he wasn't. Yeah, even though it was a stand-up comic, I don't think he was very popular out there.
Yeah, you should
get
into that routine.
So, you know, it's a hard gig.
It's a very hard gig. Audiences are fickle,
of course,
at best. But that being said, it is sometimes good to get a challenge from them. Like I, this is good.
So that's another thing. Like we'll obviously come and see more now that we're down here. So
don't stress too much.
No,
it's fine. It's interesting because all the open mics and stuff, that's all warm up for festival shows and stuff like that. That's just me. Workshopping material and seeing if an idea has legs, because if I write it down, I obviously think it's funny.
Yeah.
But when I put it in front of an audience, sometimes I'm like, oh, this might not be the right method to put this particular idea out there, or the phrasing of it is wrong.
Yeah.
There's bits and pieces that I have to workshop everything.
Yeah.
Like I've said this on here before, but I've failed in front of crowds enough times to know that I'm not funny unless I work on it.
Yeah. Well, as you said, what we think's funny to ourselves doesn't necessarily work.
No, it doesn't translate
to everyone. Many a time, just in talking, and as I said, someone fires something at you and you fire something back, and everybody just looks at you and goes, What did you say?
I know that feeling.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. That's the line? That's where the line is? That's it. Right. Okay. Good. No, it's good to know.
Yeah.
I get that at work a lot, actually. Throw things at people just to see how they stick.
Yeah.
Just to see where they land.
Well, that's just it. It's a different audience altogether.
Yeah, and I guess they're not expecting it when I'm not on stage, but I do that.
It's always good to get a reaction.
Yeah.
Because sometimes his reactions are excellent, and everybody thinks, this man's all right.
Yes.
And no one's thinking,
Maybe you should have kept his mouth shut.
That's right. But nothing ventured, nothing gained.
True. No. Have come this far along if I didn't feel like it was worth pursuing.
Yeah, no, that's right. You're doing what you want to do, which is always a good thing, and you're getting other things out of it as well. Mm-hmm. So, bonus.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's all developmental. It's very good for me in terms of coming out of my shell and stuff like that. Being very,
first time when you're with. Can't even think of his name now. Andrew.
Yeah.
And you were a bit sort of nervous that time, but time's gone.
You've
progressed. And
I can, at the very least, confidently carry a show by myself.
Yeah, well, I've watched it.
Just I've got to develop the material.
YouTube stuff. And
keep working on that.
Yeah, no.
This is good, I think. Sort of enough of that back and forth. If you can think of someone that you'd like to play, and then we can have a bit of a talk about that.
All right. If...
See what we can find.
Go with Kenny Everett.
Hello, Sid Snotty here once again. You know, I was in my favourite supermarket the other day, breaking up a few shelves, and suddenly, lo and behold, I saw on a shelf Action Yob. I mean, I knew I was famous, but I mean, golly, you know, I looked at the ingredients on the back of the packet, and it said, just wind up, and it nutcha. Hello all you friends of Dorothy out there. This is Sidney Aloysius Snot here to introduce you a very important date in the social calendar of our great nation here. As you know, upcoming is the British Eurovision Violence Contest. And here, ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce to you our British contender in said contest, Freddie... Good start. Mercury, ladies and gentlemen. Do your stuff, Fred. Oh. It's So this snail is going across the lawn on a beautiful summer morning, sun shining, birds are singing everywhere, and he feels great. He thinks to himself, life really is worth living. And he's so happy, he starts to sing. Shon, son, da moa. And the lawnmower goes, rat-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Anyway, I thought that was...
No, I see what he's going for. I see its appeal. He's, kind of reminds me of characters like when Julia Zemira. Julia Zemira would do like the Russian news reader, and just sort of those sort of over the top characters.
I mean, he had other stuff, but sure. There was the priest and all that. But that was Sid's not was my favourite one. But I don't know, what else we got? We got...
Tell me.
I don't know, I'm just trying to think, mate. Well, our old favourite is Monty Python, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't go wrong with Monty Python.
Yeah. I would like to think most people who are listening to this know Monty Python, but in case they don't.
Any particular Dead Parrot was pretty darn good. Yeah.
Let's play Dead Parrot.
Yes. Hello, I wish to register a complaint. Hello, miss.
What do you mean, miss?
Oh, I'm sorry, I have a call. I wish to make a complaint.
Sorry, we're closing for lunch.
Never mind that, my lad. I wish to complain about this parrot what I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique.
Oh, yes, the Norwegian Blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
No, it's resting. Look.
Look, my lad, I know a dead parrot when I see one, and I'm looking at one right now.
No, it's not dead. It's resting.
Resting?
Yeah. Remarkable bird, the Norwegian Blue. Beautiful plumage, isn't it?
The plumage don't enter into it. It's stone dead.
No, it's resting.
All right, then. If it's resting, I'll wake it up. Hello, Polly. I got a nice cuttlefish for you when you wake up, Polly Parrot.
There, it moved.
No, it didn't. That was you pushing the gate.
I did not.
Yes, you did. Hello, Polly. Polly. Polly Parrot, wake up. Polly! Now that's what I call a dead parrot.
No, it's stunned.
Look, my lad, I've had just about enough of this. That parrot is definitely deceased. And when I bought it not half an hour ago, you assured me that its lack of movement was due to it being tired and shagged out after a long squawk.
It's got me pining for the fjords.
Pining for the fjords? What kind of talk is that? Look, where did it fall flat on its back the moment I got it home?
The Norwegian Blue prefers kipping on its back. It's a beautiful bird, lovely plumage.
Look, I took the liberty of examining that parrot, and I discovered that the only reason that it had been sitting on its perch in the first place was that it had been nailed there.
Well, of course it was nailed there, otherwise it muscled up to those bars and boom!
Look, matey. This parrot wouldn't boom if I put 4,000 bolts through it. It's bleeding demise.
It's not. It's pining.
It's not pining. It's passed on. This parrot is no more. It has ceased to be. It's expired and gone to meet its maker. This is a late parrot. It's a stiff. Bereft of life, it rests in peace. If you hadn't nailed it to the perch, it would be pushing up the daisies. It's run down the curtain and joined the choir invisible. This is an ex-parrot.
Well, I better replace it then.
If you want to get anything done in this country, you've got to complain to your blue in the mouth.
Sorry, Gov, we're right out of parrots.
I see. I get the picture.
I've got a slug.
Does it talk?
Not really, no.
Well, it's scarcely replacement then, is it?
Listen, I'll tell you what. If you go to my brother's pet shop in Bolton, He'll replace your parrot for you.
Built me?
Yeah.
All right. Excuse me. This is Bolton, is it?
No, no, it's Ipswich.
That's Intercity Rail for you. I wish to make complete.
I don't have to do this, you know.
A bigger pardon?
I'm a qualified brain surgeon. I only do this because I like being my own boss.
Excuse me, this is irrelevant, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's not easy to pad these out 30 minutes.
Well, I wish to make complete. I got on the Bolton train and found myself deposited here in Ipswich.
No, no, this is Bolton.
The pet shop owner's brother was Lion.
Well, you can't blame British Rail for that.
If this is Bolton, I shall return to the pet shop. I understand that this is Bolton.
Yeah?
But you told me it was Ipswich.
It was a pun.
A pun?
No, no, not a pun. No, what's the other thing which reads the same backwards as forwards?
A palindrome?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a palindrome. The palindrome of Bolton would be not lob. It don't work.
Now, what do you want?
No, I'm sorry. I'm not prepared to pursue my line of inquiry any further, as I think this is getting too silly.
Quite agree, quite agree. Silly, silly, silly. Right. Get on with it. Get on with it.
Oh. I'm sorry. A frontal nudity.
They're interesting, though.
They are.
They spoke to a certain surrealist sensibility that I mean, it's still around. I feel like it's very influential. McAuliffe is very influenced by his. It's got to be. Like, I don't know for sure, but surely he's got to be.
The way he acts, actually.
Yeah. He's often the
John Cleese.
High end, pompous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Sean McAuliffe.
Yeah, no,
he's got some really good stuff, actually.
He does.
Yeah. I liked the one where he got his own sacking from Channel 2 for ringing up and complaining about him swearing. No, Channel 9 he got the sack from, didn't he? Went back to Channel 2. Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, the parking guys, they're kind of dark. Like, in a sense, they pushed against.
Oh, yeah.
They pushed against established ideas and stuff like that. And they sort of spoke with. Given that they were probably older than the people that they were, you know, mostly influencing, I feel like they spoke to a certain sensibility, and I guess a lot of good performers do that. They find it a youthful audience, and they sort of stir them up a little bit. So that made me think of this guy, Anthony Jeselnik.
Okay.
He's very much the modern dark. Like, which is in a very different vein to pushing against any sort of establishment that the Python guys did. He's nothing like them in any way.
Yeah.
But it did make me think of that, and it did make me think that I'd be curious to hear your response to where the comedic scene has shifted to in a very strong way, because he had his own TV show for a while. He's very well respected.
Okay. Where's he from?
He's American.
Okay.
Mm. He's very good. This is his latest special. It's called Thoughts and Prayers. Yep. And this is the title bit. There is a bit before it that sort of leads into it that's not super important to it, but...
They said, well, Anthony, the problem is when you make a joke on Twitter the day of a tragedy, it seems like you're making fun of the victims. And that's wrong. But that's not what I'm doing. Because, you see, the day of a tragedy, victims are not on Twitter. Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong. The day of a tragedy, victims have got victim shit to do. No one has ever been putting on a tourniquet asking, hey, are we trending? No. This is who I'm making fun of when I make a joke on Twitter the day of a tragedy. The people who see something horrible happen in the world and they run to the internet and they run to their social media, their Facebook, their Twitter, whatever they got, and they all write down the exact same thing. My thoughts and prayers. My thoughts and prayers with the people in Aurora. My thoughts and prayers with the families in Boston. Do you know what that's worth? Fucking nothing. Fucking less than nothing. Less than nothing. You are not giving any of your time, your money, or even your compassion. All you are doing is saying, don't forget about me today. Don't forget about me. Lots of crazy distractions in the news right now, but don't forget how sad I am. Those people are worthless and they deserve to be made fun of.
Well, the other one will be all right, one we've got, yeah. So just a,
yeah, it'll just be
there.
It's right there. So we had... we were distracted and then we lost... we filled up the memory card and the batteries were dying. So we paused and we've come back. We'll pick up the end of the conversation.
Yes.
We didn't get too far.
Well, these things happen.
Yeah. But we were talking about Jessel Nick being... What were we saying? I don't remember what we were saying.
He's relevant, like, as in, yeah, people liking
sad things on,
and,
right.
You know, how it is a bit weird.
Yeah, it's a strange influence. Strange. Like, strange culture.
I mean, I suppose it's the culture of the modern society, not just Australia.
It's everyone.
Everybody does it. Oh, he's dead. Oh, let's like that. Yes, yes. I don't think that's what you've got to do.
No. And I guess it's the culture that needs commenting on because it's the newest culture in the same way that...
Everybody's learning.
Yeah. We're trying to figure out what the boundaries are and where it's okay to say things and where it's not okay.
Well, that's right.
What you can say and the permanence of the internet and the permanence of online comments.
Well, the stupidness of some things.
Wow, yeah. The ridiculousness of what people put... to represent themselves online, like how people present. Like, I don't think I'm curating too much when I don't put every stupid thought that I have.
Exactly. Oh, I'm having online. A cup of coffee.
Yeah.
While I'm sitting here on the toilet. I mean, yeah.
Friend of mine. That. She goes to me, right? Like, second level, like, you know, not direct friend, but someone I know and I've known for a while said to me one day, she just goes, everything that you put is sort of like either, you know, it's like charged in some way or it's trying to say something or something like that. Why don't you ever just put, had berry porridge was good? That's because I don't care about that as a statement. Yeah. And I don't want that to represent me online.
Exactly.
And that's what I...
All right,
so it happened to us again. Dead batteries, been replaced. SD card is good. Let's pick up this dead conversation.
Let's go again.
All right. So I brought you Jessel Nick, and I did mention briefly before that I thought he had Pryor-esque qualities.
Yeah.
Right, in that he's kind of blunt and sort of says what's going on, says what's on the mind. And we can end on, we've got a quick one here. I assume most people know, people of a certain generation know Pryor.
Yeah.
But if, I guess if there's younger listeners, they might not know him and they might not
be
familiar. And this might be a good education for them.
Yeah, well, definitely be definite education. There's no doubt about that.
So we'll play this. The clip's called
America don't know who you are.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. I'm sorry we didn't have any drinks to give you. But we have lovely tablecloths. If you have some mustard, you could eat the tablecloth. I'm doing a stand-up on the show because the people, NBC said, well, America don't know who you are. And you come out and they're scared. They just see black people and they get nervous if they don't know who they are. So you should come out and introduce yourself. I was born. Then they feel safe. Oh, it's all right, Marge. You can watch him. He was born. It's wonderful. And I feel like a kid. I love children because they talk so straight. I love the way they be singing, right? This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Aquarius. And you ask them questions, they never answer you straight, right? They go, what happened? First, when we went in, Jimmy, then he pulled things. And I didn't do it. No matter what you ask them, they'd be, and when they cuss, they're great. You know, they go, poop a dooey poop up. Dooey poop coming. It was beautiful, Jack. My father had a great way of dealing with me. Richard! Mm-hmm. Come here. Come here. No, I said, come here. No, not back. Bring it up here. Right. What's that reefer doing in your pocket? What? A reefer in your pocket, damn it. What was the reefer? The reefer in your pocket. And my mother would tell on me, right? She'd be talking, but it hurts me more than it hurts you. I said, well, let him beat your kids and hillbillies are my favorite people. Because hillbillies are like children, too. You know, they don't know what they're talking about either, you know. You ever get lost in the South and ask the hillbilly directions? They tell you the history of the world, but they never tell you where you want to go. I say, how do you get down? Well, I'll tell you what you do, boy. You take Junction 35 and you drive down about 14 miles. You make a left turn up there by the big hog sign. Jed Wells built that hog sign up there back in 1927. And it has a big snout coming out of it, because I remember, old boy, had a semi I was driving down through there, and it jackknifed on him and just flipped over the road. Cans and everything laid all around. What'd you ask me? This is beautiful. Travel. Crashes worry me. You know, I'm afraid to fly because I think I'm going to die. And I don't want to die. I don't want to die because if I die, I'll leave some money. And my folks are going to argue over the money. In my family, my grandmother will argue over money. My grandmother, because anybody dies in the family, she takes everything. Oh, my grandmother gets, don't tell me when he died, he had a shoebox up in the closet with the money in. And he had that ring belonging to my brother Bill. It's great. You go to black funerals. Black people have a fit at funerals. White people go to funerals and you're just dead. Yep, that's it. Is that dirt necessary? You know, black people fall out of funerals.
I mean, it's not one of his most provocative bits.
No, it wasn't. It was it was
for television, so yes, you had to be a bit
yeah.
clean.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it gives a bit of a sensibility of what he was and who he is.
Yeah.
How he sort of handled himself.
Yeah, no. He was, as you said, he was funny because he just didn't care. He'd just say what he wanted to say and how it should have been.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you shouldn't be censored about every single little thing. You know, comedy's made of. You get your laughs out of. As the other guy said before, you know, tragedies, unfortunately, are sometimes funny.
Yeah, because. Yeah. Well, the formula's supposed to be tragedy in time. But he prides himself on being the first one.
Yeah.
Trying to get something happening on the day of.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, I mean. Yeah. But, no, I mean, comedy is a selected thing. People. View of some, I can say something funny and someone will say
it's extremely subjective.
It's
this has been mentioned in podcasts that I've listened to before, but it's one of the few art forms where someone will tell the artist that they're not, like, they'll tell stand-ups of years and years of note that they're not funny or that they're not comedians that because they didn't find them funny. Whereas a musician, you'd be like, oh, I don't like that style of music. But you're just not funny. You know, I guess we don't have sub, except for like sketch and improv, we don't really have sub-genres of what comedy is. Like, you can't break it down into.
That's right. Comedy is, as you said, it's a perception of what someone makes it out to be. On one night, I might hear something and go, On another night, I hear the same thing, and you think it's hysterical.
Yeah.
And also, if you've been drinking, of course.
That helps a little bit.
Everything's funny.
Yeah. No, I find that, like, the same material is so inconsistently landing, depending on the audience.
Yeah.
Depending on the mood.
Yeah, the mood. That's
the comedian before you.
Yeah, possibly.
They can... Like, if they're not the right sensibility for you, they could take the crowd in a different direction
and then you're coming
working
in and,
to bring them back this way.
Yeah, no, that's the whole thing too. I mean, yeah, if you're not first up, or even if you are first up,
they're not warmed up.
That's it. That's the hard one, I suppose, coming in. If you are first up, then you've got to get
you're
them going.
You're setting
the
bar.
And you've got to figure out what they really is going to get them going.
Yeah. Which is nice in a longer set when you're doing like a festival show.
Yeah,
if you're doing like a 10-minute open mic, it's kind of hard.
Oh yeah, especially if you've got to feel your way.
Yeah, you've got to win the crowd, get a sense of who they are.
And then
it's good to have a
just get into you, and then
then you
wind up. Yeah. No, that would be the hard part. Because I myself, depending on your mood, I like comedy, but you may be going.
Yeah.
I'm really not into this.
Yeah.
Even though you would be normally any other night. It's a win some, lose some sort of thing.
Absolutely. That feels like a good note to end on. Feels like we've got a good amount out of that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
That's it.
No worries, man.
So that was my dad. We were just talking about comedy. My comedic sensibilities and the stuff my dad used to listen to when he was growing up. I'm not going to do any plugs or anything. This is a little Christmas present for you guys. So we're just going to finish this with a song by Monty Python. Always look on the bright side of life. Seemed relevant to the episode, given we were talking about comedic influences. See you in January.
Cheer up, Brian. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the right side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Come on, give up.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
First things happen to see, you know.
Always look on the right side of life.
What you got to lose? You know, you come from nothing, you go back to nothing. What you lost?
Always
nothing.
Look on the right side of life.
Nothing will come from nothing, you know. Incidentally, this record's available
always
in the foyer.
Right.
Someone's got to live as well, you know. Who do you think pays for all this rubbish?
Always look
I'm
going to
make the money back,
right,
you know. I told him. I said to him, Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money back.
Always